Hey, everybody. If you've enjoyed the content I've been sharing on this podcast, I think you will love my new free ebook, How to Create Resilient Health. One of my signature talks covers why stress impacts our health so negatively and what exactly we can do about it. After every time I give that talk, I always get requests from people in the audience for the actual presentation so that they can go back through it again and reference it on an ongoing basis. This was happening so much that I finally realized I needed to create a new resource on the topic, which is this beautiful ebook I've just released. In this book, I break down the stress response, symptoms of stress, how stress impacts your health and your hormones, and most importantly, share what you can do to make yourself more resilient to it. I share healthy strategies relating to lifestyle, nutrition, and supplements to help you create and maintain the habits needed to better thrive under stress. If you're one of millions of Americans that have struggled with chronic stress, you are not alone. Let this ebook be your guide. Hop on over to yourlongevityblueprint.com/creating-resilience for your free download.
It's really important to clean up the bedroom. And the second thing I'll say is just changing the habits to make it so that you don't have devices touching your body.
Welcome to the Your Longevity Blueprint Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Stephanie Gray. My number one goal with the show is to help you discover your personalized plan to build your dream health and live a longer, happier, truly healthier life. Today you get to hear again from Nick Pino. Last week in part one, he started sharing how EMFs stress your biology and how to easily minimize your everyday EMF exposures. He also highlighted regulatory capture at the FCC and why regulators have failed to protect the public against this radiation. Please start by listening first to part one. This week in part two, I'll ask him his thoughts on Wi-Fi, microwaves, EMF blocking clothing, Apple Watches, Bluetooth earbuds, and much more. Let's get started. Let's go there next. So how can we minimize EMFs from everyday gadgets? I have a whole list of just kind of little questions I want to ask personally, kind of how you live your life also. I heard at one point you didn't even have a cell phone. I don't know if that's
well, I barely use it, you know. I don't use it often. I can go through, you know, I'd say the first thing you want to mitigate against is really your bedroom. That's the first thing I would do before thinking about anything else. You want to make sure that if you go and lie in your bed and then take your arm and do, you know, a large circle, you shouldn't touch anything that could emit EMFs.
And what about the circuits in the walls? Are you concerned about circuits in the walls?
That's a different type of radiation you're getting. Yeah. So that's a lower frequency electric or the magnetic component of that field. But all of these are cumulative. So, you know, I start talking about radio frequency, generally speaking, because it's easier to mitigate against. But some people go a little bit further and turn off the breakers to that room, for example, to lower the electrical fields. And some people get even more sleep quality benefits by doing so. But if you really want to investigate all types of fields in your home, I would recommend hiring a professional such as a building biology consultant. And that's something I would recommend almost, you know, that anyone should do, because oftentimes if you go about your home and try to find sources, you might be able to find sources, turn them off. But if you're concerned about things that are from the exterior and bringing radiation in, such as cell phone towers, it's very hard to pinpoint which tower is problematic. What are the mitigation strategies that could be taking? So when it comes to cell phone towers, it's a little bit more overwhelming. But so that's why I often bring it back to the bedroom and try to clean it as much as possible. If you turn off the breakers, that's one thing. But getting the cell phones out, and sometimes it's not just the phone. It's a tablet. It's a laptop in the corner that's unloading a series or something. So try to not have devices in the bedroom. It looks simple, but when you create the separation, the effects are not the same. At 2 feet from your head, your phone already drops 90% in intensity. So imagine what it is, you know, in the next room. It still has some biological effect, but we're talking about a fraction of a percent. So it's really, really important to clean up the bedroom. And the second thing I'll say is just changing the habits to make it so that you don't have devices touching your body. And that's tough, because that's a tough sell. Most people nowadays have a cell phone on their person almost all the time. A lot of men have it in the pocket. Women put it sometimes in their bra, and even men put it in the shirt pocket. All of these uses are among the most,
all the is time. The most patients, dangerous thing you can do. Especially middle-aged men, they come in and they all have like heart arrhythmias, I swear. They're coming in for, we optimize hormones at our clinic, and many times they have a cell phone sitting right in their shirt pocket. And then I see they have AFib and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, like, is there an association there potentially? It's one of the first things I'm recommending is get that cell phone like out of your pocket. Yes. So,
yeah. Sorry. And it's very bizarre because when you look at the data we have, there's even Apple that warned users over the MagSafe technology that's available since iPhone 12. And the MagSafe is, you know, a strong magnet that they added to the back of their phone to have wireless charging. And they said people with pacemakers can be at medical risk. So what they said, what they didn't want to say is that could kill you. I mean, so they didn't say it like this. They said it in, you know, verbiage, legal verbiage. But the reality is these technologies, if they're too close to the body, can interfere with pacemakers. And I found it funny in an ironic sense that we're not talking about what could happen if you have, you know, a human heart and not an artificial heart or artificial, you know, aid. So the reality is we have pacemaker cells that use electricity also. So it's crazy to me that there's a lot of research on, oh, no, we don't want to mess around with medical technologies, and interfering with medical technologies is very, very bad, very dangerous. But interfering with the real heart, there's no problem whatsoever. Oh, yeah. I mean, so it's, you know, the funding is in medical technologies, and medical companies will fund these studies to make sure that the phones are not interfering with their users and they want to save lives and understand all this. But then what are the effects on a real heart that doesn't need a pacemaker? Well, one of the effects that is seen is potentially heart arrhythmia, especially in people that are sensitive, but over time, who knows? So that's one of the uses you don't want to have. And if you put your phone near your body, I suggest that it's on airplane mode. And what you could do is pre-download podcasts, pre-download music. Yes. On Spotify, you have the option to download things. So
Netflix, really, pre-download, before you travel on a plane, download your movie.
You can pre-download on tablets. Another example for kids is pre-download content. So that way, if the kiddo is using a tablet, especially young ones, on their person, they're not exposed. You don't need to be on Wi-Fi all the time. You don't need to stream these things. You can pre-download content. Even I have, you know, on my son's tablet, there's a Disney Plus, and I can download entire movies in no time. And then he can watch offline for extended weeks. So the storage is so great on these devices. There's literally no reason to always be streaming, because when you're streaming, this is one of the highest EMF emitting activities you can ever do. So you have a lot of intensity towards your body. And in children, these hormonal effects and these effects on cancer are even more concerning, because of course they're still developing and they're smaller.
Thank you for mentioning that. So I guess I want to go two directions really quick before we come back to minimizing our exposure in the home. I know we kind of talked about the bedroom, but kind of on the contrary. Okay, so you were saying basically when you're streaming, when your phone's constantly connecting to the network, right, that we'll just say the danger is amplified. So then what about all these people who have their phone on Bluetooth and they have location services on and all these things, right? Is that amplifying the problem?
Yeah, it's multiple problems into one. So you're completely right. I tell people hit airplane mode. It's a little bit too simplistic in a sense, because you can be on airplane mode, but then open Wi-Fi back on. So you have multiple antennas inside a phone. You have a Wi-Fi, you have the Bluetooth that, you know, connect with accessories such as Bluetooth earbuds or, you know, your favorite media player that will have speakers on there that are Bluetooth, for example. And then you also have a cellular antenna. So that's three different ones. Yep. The GPS usually is passive. So it means that you can be on airplane mode and still use the GPS on your phone and it will track you, but it's not emitting anything. It's receiving from GPS. So there's a video on my YouTube channel on how to use Google Maps even while being offline. You can start your trip and then it will still track your car, although it's less precise than when you're actively receiving pings from cell phone towers. What you want to do is just, when you look at your phone, you're on airplane mode and you turn off the cellular antenna by doing so. And then you want to cross out the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth icons. And this is how you know that there's no exposure. Or you can use an EMF detector to verify that this is the case. Because if you have a sound function on it, you'll be able to tell very quickly, is it still emitting something? Because you put it very close to the to the device and it gets louder, well, the device is emitting something and it's not good for you.
Sure, sure. And I also want to go back to kids really quick because I like that you brought that up and I feel like I kind of skipped over children and I need to go back. So I feel like, you know, this generation of children is on tablets and are on cell phones and I mean, more so than any other generation, right? And they're like the smartest and quickest with technology too. But how do we know, or what are some examples of how children are affected by EMFs? I mean, you've mentioned brain tumors and other, you know, but what are some other symptoms?
There's strong research around that. And that's an area of research. I just talked about this afternoon in a different interview. And Dr. Hugh Taylor at Yale is one of the main researchers on the topic. And he said, we have the human data on epidemiology and we have animal data that for him, he says, it's clear cause and effect. And what am I talking about? The more a mom is exposed to EMFs while she's building baby, the more then that baby later in life before school age will risk having ADHD-like symptoms.
Wow.
And that's a twofold increase in behavioral issues, emotional problems, hyperactivity by the time they reach school age for the mothers who use their cell phones the most. So there's a direct correlation. And we're talking about multiple large epidemiology studies that are showing this. And then there's the same behavior is seen in rats and their offspring. So the same is seen in animal models as well. So he said there's clear cause and effect. So for him, it's causal. And if that's true, it means that, you know, one of the most sensitive population is the unborn fetuses, that how it's impacting the nervous system. Is it that, again, it's half a cup of coffee for the fetus, except it's not just half a cup. It's now cups of coffee for a fetus. So the fetus develops in a way that it becomes hyperactive or it becomes hyperstimulated. We don't know the exact mechanism, but we shouldn't be waiting for these mechanisms anyhow. The message is don't have a phone right next to the abdomen and no laptop on the big belly, which, you know, I see a lot of pregnant mothers do. And that's that's surely not a blame because I know moms want to do anything to protect their baby. So once you know better, you do better. But there are certain products such as EMF blocking radiation blankets that you could use that make it much safer to have certain exposures. Even if you're just scrolling your phone, it will shield the womb area. And the more a baby grows, the more likely they are to be exposed because they push out and then, you know, the skin becomes, there's this thin layer as the entire baby is being formed. It's even more, it's concerning for different reasons early in pregnancy when it comes to the development of a fetus that is, you know, a few cells small at the beginning. And then there are different concerns over the fact that the baby is pushing out and more exposed to external factors at the end of the pregnancy. So on all levels, you know, the data says this is very concerning for fetuses and then young children as well.
As well, children are very susceptible. So that blanket that you mentioned, I don't know what brand I have. I want to say it was called like Belly Armor, maybe. That I even have my son when he wants to play a game on my phone. And, you know, granted, I have a safe sleep case on my phone, too. But I put that blanket over his belly and I say, OK, honey, you can play this. But you got to have him wear the blanket also.
So yeah, that's good.
I mean, anything I can do to protect him. Let's go back to the home, though. So I don't know if you had to pick like a biggest needle mover in the home for protecting your family. And I mean, really, if you even have Wi-Fi in your home, I'd like to ask just kind of personal questions, what you do, what you've maybe, and I'm sure this has developed over you gaining all of your knowledge over the past several years, but tell us what else we can do maybe outside the bedroom, but what are other big needle movers in the home for protecting our families?
Turning off Wi-Fi at night at the minimum is a very good practice because a lot of people find that even though they don't turn off the Wi-Fi from neighbors, right, or from the entire neighborhood, the one Wi-Fi router that is closer to their pillow is likely their own in their home. So wherever it is. And for some people, they even told me, Nick, I think it's under my bed. And I said, well, maybe you want to move it away because that's not a good spot. Or, you know, you don't move it, but you turn it off. So there's no harm there. So making sure that the Wi-Fi is turned off. In my case, when my wife was pregnant with our son, we both decided in common accord, because it has to be negotiated. It cannot be imposed by the EMF guy. And of course, it can be a source of conflict in couples if the other significant other doesn't have the information. It kind of sounds crazy at first, but if you make them aware of the research and you share a few things with them, generally speaking, they can agree, okay, at least we're going to turn it off at night. But what we decided to do is cut off the Wi-Fi antenna, and we haven't had Wi-Fi at home for 6 years. And how we do it is that our phones can use the cellular network from time to time, 4G, and now the 5G networks are here. And what can I tell you? They're here to stay. So it's kind of, yeah, it's a bit discouraging, but we focus on what we can do in a city. And in Montreal, what we can do is turn off our own Wi-Fi, because our son would have been playing for years on end in his favorite spot, which would have been right next to the router. And our condo is fairly small. So, I mean, where do you escape from the router, right? To not be near it. In big homes, I tell people, if you can relocate it to a corner of the garage where, you know, it's never near someone, maybe that's something advantageous. Sometimes they tell me, well, you know, the signal now isn't that great, so we need 5 boosters in every level. So you're bringing more and more of these EMFs in your home. So in reality, what you can do instead is use cables. And that's a tough sell. That's a big change. But we've been using Ethernet cables to connect the router where the antenna is turned off, so no Wi-Fi, to our computers. And you can also hardwire or use Ethernet cables for your phone, for tablets. And we have both our offices that are hardwired. And the advantage of that, many people tend to forget that, you know, if the signal goes in the air, it reflects on the wall and it has a hard time getting to your computer. So it's not as strong as when it goes into a wire. When it goes in the wire, stays in the wire, it's faster, it's more reliable, and it's safer on all levels compared to a Wi-Fi. So in reality, I used to be very frustrated over the Wi-Fi we had on that in that condo. So for me, it's been an upgrade in a sense. And of course, especially given the fact that I don't move my computer around in my home office, I just put it there. I mean, it's a laptop, but I use it there or in a coffee shop. So in a coffee shop, of course, there's no wire to speak of, but most of the time I work from home and I'm able to get wired in. And if you decide to use an internet cable, something to note is that you also need to turn off Wi-Fi on your computer, because if you put the cable in your computer doesn't even turn off Wi-Fi. It's kind of a stupid technology, but that's how it's built. So you need to manually turn off Wi-Fi antennas. So again, if you want to mitigate EMFs, you have to go a little bit, forget about convenience, invest a little bit of effort. So you need to be conscious about it.
I have some other kind of unique questions. Do you have a microwave in your home?
No, I don't. I'm a home chef or amateur cook, you know, that has been cooking for so many years. I do all the cooking at home, and I hate anything that is, you know, microwave oven reheated. And so that's one thing. And then, and then the radiation, when it's on, it's leaking quite a lot. In fact, it can leak as much as multiple cell phones. So if you're using it all the time, and let's say it's exposing like your entire body, because it's they tend to be lower these days, kind of in the cupboards and things like that. It's not good. These are exposures that I can avoid. And the only use that I think a microwave is good for is to sanitize the different things you use to clean dishes. You know, you can wet it and then put it 30 seconds in a microwave and it kills everything. It can also kill everything on your body. So, you know, I don't like it. I don't use it.
So currently being pregnant at work here, we do have a microwave in our break room, and we have a lot of staff. So they're, you know, they will use the microwave from time to time. And they just kind of know, like, if I'm around, don't use the microwave. They always tell me, okay, you're free. You're good to go back there and get your lunch. Cause I'm paranoid. I don't want to be by it. Okay. What about cars? Like, do all new cars have built-in GPSs? Like, how dangerous, maybe you can also get into, like, is it to be even as a passenger riding in a car on your cell phone, connecting to the network, watching a show on Netflix or whatnot? Why is that? I'm going to come back to this word amplified. So kind of tell me about, you know, just the danger of being on a cell phone in a car or a plane.
You don't want to be on devices when you're in a moving car, generally speaking, but who's following this advice, really? It's tough. So what you can do is you can go on Google Maps while you're connected to the network, and then input your destination, and then go back on airplane mode. And you're not going to get the traffic update. So if you're driving in traffic and relying on like real-time stuff, you don't want to do that. But if it's a long-term trip, you can probably pre-download your music, pre-download your podcasts or interviews or content that you like, and then keep your phone on airplane mode the entire trip. So that's one way to do it. And then, of course, in most cars, including, it's not just the electric cars or the hybrid cars that are, let's say, an EMF concern. It's all modern cars now have Wi-Fi in them. They have, some of them have a cellular hotspot in the dashboard.
Yeah.
4G LTE, especially the GM models. But I tell you that now, and then next month, they might come up, like Kia might do the same. And it's all the competitors in the car industry do not go currently for low EMF. It's not even in their conception. They go for what's cool, what do people want? And people want connectivity, connectivity, connectivity. So it is tough to go in a new car and solve these problems. In some cases, you can go into computers in the car dashboard and turn off Bluetooth, turn off Wi-Fi, and just turn off the stuff you're not using. Because even if you're not using it, it is looking for a signal. So it's pinging Wi-Fi or Bluetooth in your face for no reason. I always tell people, is your car a concern? Well, it depends on if you're spending time in your car. And some people tend to forget that. But, you know, my dad is a realtor and he's probably spending hours every day in his car. So that's a concern for him. That's, in fact, I would consider it an occupational exposure for him to be in his car. But for people that have either a quick commute or now they work from home, well, it becomes almost irrelevant. If you use your car 30 minutes per day, what should you mitigate against? Your computer, which is in front of you, right? I wouldn't be too paranoid over cars, but the reality is some people develop electrosensitivities over time. Some of them seem to do worse in electric cars for many reasons. But then they might switch to a very modern car that is 2024 and beyond that is gas powered and then feel equally bad because there are so many sources of EMS in a car. And when you're in a moving car using your phone, you are amplifying the signal because sometimes the connectivity is not good. It's not picking up the antenna. So what the phone is doing is ramping up its power, you know, screaming louder and louder to try to communicate with the cell tower. So the recommendations from many EMF studies are try to avoid this as much as possible. And I think pre-downloading content, changing your habits around how you use the phone. Again, you're trading, you know, that convenience for a little bit more health. Isn't it what most people are doing these days if they understand that junk food isn't good for them? They, instead of going for the convenience every day, maybe they go once a week to the junk food joint, you know, or once a month. So it is just part of, you know, being healthy these days is not falling for all these conveniences because many of them aren't good for you.
Love it. Okay.
A wide and complex variety of B vitamins are essential for the body to convert food into cellular energy. Unfortunately, we don't get as many as we need from our diets. Additionally, certain medications like metformin and birth control drugs can hinder our body's ability to get B vitamins from our diets. When this happens, we can become vitamin B deficient. This can be problematic as our bodies use these vitamins for a variety of biological processes. One of the key roles of B vitamins is to serve as prime cofactors for the Krebs cycle, the biochemical pathway responsible for maintaining energy production. When this suffers, we don't quite make the same energy we once had. Low B vitamins can lead to feelings of fatigue, weakness, low mood, headaches, and even PMS. Supplementing with B vitamins is a very easy way to introduce these essential vitamins back into our systems. But you want to avoid synthetic B vitamins like cyanocobalamin and folic acid that many bodies can't convert to the active forms and instead opt for methyl or hydroxycobalamin options for B12 and methylfolate for B9. These are easier for your body to absorb and use, especially if you have MTHFR variants. We carry capsule and sublingual B vitamins named Methyl B Complex and Sublingual Methyl Bs on our website. Use code B Vitamins for 10% off at yourlongevityblueprint.com.
EMF blocking clothing, good or bad thing? What do you think?
It really depends. Some people that have electrosensitivities and feel really bad in environments that are electropolluted, such as cities or when they're traveling airports and inside the plane, some people put the clothing on and they feel much better. In fact, some physicians, doctors in environmental medicine or functional medicine doctors tell me that they recommend these patients to wear the clothing. Some of it is for the head, set t-shirts that cover large body areas, it seems to minimize how much you're going to be exposed by reflecting away the radiation, but it's not a complete protection. A complete protection would be living in a bubble, right? That's another layer of feeling and looking weird at the airport, or even you getting in troubles at the TSA, because there are things that you can wear that make you look like a beekeeper. And for some people that are so electrosensitive, that's the only way they can live. It is an extreme tragedy for them, but at that point, they're probably better off not living in a city in the first place because it's too polluted for them, right? They need to change environments. But generally speaking, I think they're positive, and I hope to see larger scale studies on EMF blocking boxers or underwear. And it's kind of it's kind of a crazy thing to say, you know, oh, my underwear is shielding me against radiation. What are you talking about? New problems, new solutions. So engineers have come up with these. I wear them sometimes. I haven't seen a lot of data, but it is likely that it could prevent some of the endocrine disruption we talked about from phones in the pocket, for example. It shouldn't be up to the users to protect themselves. That's what really I'm concerned about, and I'm frustrated, and I'm kind of facing every day in scope of my work, is it should be that cell phones are safe. This is not the case. So if we give people tools such as the EMF blocking boxers and they forget about, you know, oh, I didn't put my phone on airplane mode, it's in my pocket again. But then at least they're protecting their fertility. I think it's not a perfect solution, doesn't address the problem. It's kind of an indirect solution, but I think it might be beneficial for some people to try it, especially if you're trying to conceive and you have a hard time. Why not try it? And of course, it's quite an investment, though, replacing all your underwear with EMF blocking. These tend to be expensive. So maybe ask for a Christmas gift or something.
I'd like to see those studies, too. I think I see you wearing an Oura ring. Are you wearing an Oura ring or some sort of biohacking device? Yeah. Do you put that in airplane mode?
It's always on airplane mode. And what I like about it, most biohacking tools that use Bluetooth cannot store the data locally in the machine. What it does instead in many situations is you wear something on your face or smart glasses or I don't know, and it always syncs to your phone. So syncing to your phone is always pinging Bluetooth. The Oura Ring is not like that. Instead, you can sync once per day by putting it back on the charger. And it will open Bluetooth and then it will connect to the phone and it will say, thank you. Here's the data. You slept very well, Nick. Cool. And then I can put it back on airplane mode. No emission whatsoever. No radiation. And I think that's a smart way to do it, because why exactly would I need my data to be synced multiple times per second to know what was my sleep? And then it also makes us neurotic. Let's face it. I mean, it's like, oh no, I'm doing this interview right now and my stress levels are off the chart. I mean, talk about something that makes you paranoid or anxious. So I think, you know, quantification might be good, but many sleep tracking devices that do not have this option of the Oura contribute to the problem, ironically so. So personally, I'm not a fan of
talk
anything.
Someone out of an Apple Watch. I have so many patients with Apple Watches and they're like, oh, I have all these children and I have got to know, someone's got to be able to get a hold of me. You know, and I'm like, well, they could call your cell phone. Like, you don't have to have your phone on your wrist at all times. So talk 30-second spiel, talk someone out of wearing an Apple Watch. Go.
Well, you know, the Apple Watch is emitting a class 2B carcinogen, but in your veins, and your entire blood supply is running every few minutes and is being irradiated. So we know that there are certain medical technologies that do the same, except with healthy signals such as light, and that's beneficial. But we can only be left guessing what this oxidative stress is doing, irradiating your blood all the time. In my mind, that's a very poor use of technology. And if I had an Apple Watch, I would likely keep it on airplane mode almost all the time, but it kind of defeats the purpose. It becomes just a cool watch that looks good, right? So I'm not a fan of anything that is touching your body, because we know the science is there because of these tumors. And of course, there aren't really wrist tumors or finger cancer. But at the same time, you know, some people are reporting rashes or are reporting a sort of carpal tunnel and are working on a computer feeling inflamed, and then they can pinpoint that when they remove that watch, eventually it heals. So it looks like it's keeping some more sensitive or more, you know, prone people to higher degrees of inflammation from these machines, which is not surprising. I'm not surprised by these findings. And if you can even find threads of discussion on Reddit and on the internet left and right about what they call, I think, smartwatch rash. If you look for that, a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, it's a nickel allergy. It's a stainless steel allergy. What they don't talk about is the fact that in even healthy participants in the past, we found that EMFs can stimulate the mast cells to release histamine, right? Just like an allergic reaction. For some people, it will go as far as having a skin rash. So I think that some of these rashes are directly due to people being irradiated and the skin saying, what on earth is going on? I don't know what is this signal, but I'm going to release histamine and try to, you know, buffer this allergen. But, you know, it's like fighting against a ghost. It doesn't work. And it keeps going and going and going, and you're inflaming your region. It's certainly not good for you.
Fighting against a ghost. Yeah, I haven't heard that one. That's good. That was great. Okay, I only have a couple more questions. You've given us so much information today. I know you've been on so many interviews. How many times have you been on an interview where the host is wearing like Bluetooth, you know, headphones, and you're cringing and you have to somehow work that into the conversation?
many times. But, you know, it brings me to something. I have many other activists in my circles. And one host told me that she was trying to get someone on her show to talk about EMFs. But then the person realized that she was wearing Bluetooth earbuds. And that person, I don't know if that's a building biologist, said, oh, that's unacceptable. I won't do your show. And kind of, you know, was very rude about it. And I think that just shows you that's not how you do it, because people wear what they think is okay for them. You know, it's not like you can blame people.
No, it's an opportunity for...
Yeah, that's an opportunity to educate them. And for sure, if I talk to a podcast host, I would say, you know, that's a class 2B carcinogen. Some scientists say that should be a class 1, and it's in your ear. And I would only ask them a question. How many hours are you wearing this during the week? And if that's just during this one interview, well, 1 hour per week. I would say, okay, well, you know, it's not one of your main exposures, except many people would answer, well, it's always in my ear from the morning until I go to bed, and or I fall asleep with it. Even worse, you know, it's like the entire day. So in that case, we're talking about prolonged exposure to something that we think has been linked with brain tumor. So anyone who claims that Bluetooth technologies are perfectly safe is completely disregarding the science we have. At a minimum, we could say it is very likely carcinogenic, and we don't know how it will affect the future generations or even that generation of adults. I mean, we have no idea.
What's the difference between like what? Well, I can't quite see what you're wearing, but between like a corded or air tube headset. What's the deal with the air tube? What's the difference?
The difference is basically that on an air tube, you would have just a tube of air that goes from about this location here to your ear. And what it changes is that it's going to not have any type of electricity going in your ear. This is a decent tool. However, I think it's a technology that is built more for extremely hypersensitive individuals, where I think for some people they might see benefits. But for a lot of people, for me, it's a problem because the fit isn't right on any model I've ever tried. And also the sound is not good. So instead, what I use is something called HARD, called HARD. And that's the acronym for, I cannot recall what it's for, but it's from Shield Your Body. And that's basically a tool that has a microphone jack, auxiliary jack that you put in your computer. And then you plug your headphones in that. So it's a filter. It will filter out any dirty frequencies that would go up the cord. So it's not a complete replacement for air tubes, but I think it's an in-between solution that is more decent.
I have never heard of that.
People still want the good audio quality also, which the air tubes severely lack, unfortunately. So.
Sure. Given that you speak a lot and you travel a lot, are there any tips you have? Like, are you someone who, after getting off a plane, is going to go ground? Or like, are there any major traveling tips that you could share that have helped you?
I think that blue blockers have really changed how I travel in a major way. When I travel overseas, it doesn't happen a lot these days, but I would try to have my blue blockers be the same timing as my destination in the morning. But I know in France it's getting late. Then I'll start wearing the very dark blue blockers as if I'm in France, for example. So I'm, and the same thing in Asia, it's even, you know, sometimes it's more complicated, but you just look at the time of arrival and you act as if you're going there. So what I've seen is that in one case, I was able to adapt within 24 hours of arrival, which is completely different from what we hear is, you know, it will take one day per hour of jet lag or differences in the time zone. The blue blockers seem to really be able to modulate your ability to adapt. And a second thing I would say is meal timing. If you can try to forget about the endless meals and snacks that they serve you, bring your food or kind of ask them to put your plate aside for a while and eat as if you're at your destination. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't feel like eating, but it's dinner time in France and you're going to France, then you eat and you eat a little bit at least, because there's a circadian rhythm to appetite and it will set your circadian rhythm also. I think that earthing, being barefoot on the earth, on any type of ground, dirt, or going swimming, for example, or going to the beach at your destination is also highly beneficial. This is the main thing I'm using for jet lag. But I must say, when I travel, I always bring a long Ethernet cable, because I tend to be able, not in hotel rooms, but in most Airbnbs, you have access to the router. And even sometimes I turn off the Wi-Fi inside the router because I'm able to. But even if you're not able to turn off the Wi-Fi on the router, you can plug in, turn off the Wi-Fi on your computer, which is closer to your body compared to that Wi-Fi router anyhow. And that's your main source of exposure, is your laptop in front of you, right? So what you do is turn off the Wi-Fi antenna and plug it in. And then at least you're mitigating that. And the Ethernet cable can be 50 feet if you want. So it's a little bit, you know, it's big, but doesn't take that much room in a medium suitcase either. So it's one of the main things I would bring in my travel, along an EMF meter or detector.
Oh, we didn't get to meters. Oh, I got to come back to meters. I was going to ask you your last question, but now I got to ask meter. What meter? I mean, I know years ago when you wrote your book, you know, what very affordable small meter you had recommended. Has that changed? Like, what do you recommend for in-home use, let's say?
It used to be the Enviro RD10. It's very small, about $150, but I don't think it's manufactured anymore, unfortunately. And something a little bit more sophisticated and with a sound function that I like is $200. So it's not that expensive. For most people, it's quite an investment still, but something that you'll probably keep for a good 10, 15 years, hopefully. And I like the Sam Protec 33 on my website, theemfguy.com. You can find it in the shop section. So it measures three types of field: the radio frequency radiation, so the wireless stuff, the magnetic field, and electric fields. But at the same time, I'm using LEDs. So it makes it also very simple for people. And I've come to the understanding that, you know, if you're not interested to be a building biologist, you should probably keep your meters very simple, because it creates massive confusion in some people. And even, you know, I've seen some people say, you know, you recommended the meter, Nick, but I'm more confused than ever, so I'd never use it. Other people tell me I use it all the time, but I'm anxious all the time. So sometimes it can be tricky using a meter. So really, why do you want a meter is to verify what is emitting radiation and what is not. So if you say, well, I've turned off my Wi-Fi antenna on my computer, and then you put the meter, you put it near your computer, you hear, and it keeps screaming at you. You say, oh, well, maybe I didn't. And you realize that the work has not been done properly because the antenna is still emitting. That's just an example. But you can also find sources such as, you know, in hotel rooms, oftentimes the alarm clock might be Bluetooth, but you don't realize
by your head.
It.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how I found our cable box that's how I measured a baby monitor too, was just having a meter and then thinking, oh my gosh. Yeah. Is there any way to know, like, especially for someone who's looking, I would love to build a non-toxic home one day. I can see visible huge cell phone towers, right? But is there any way to know or predict like where those may be one day, like, placed. Does that make sense? Like, you would hate to build a home and then, you know, 2 months later, they put up a cell tower to, you know, a block over. Is there any way to know? Do you have any?
No, definitely not. It's these days, maybe in certain countries, the different cell phone companies are less reckless than in Canada or the US. But right now, it's really at its worst, where there are some rules about the placement of cell towers, but even the cell phone companies are disregarding even the permits, getting the right permits. They're kind of filling fake permits. And there's an extremely large fraction of all permits that are fake. And that has been found by attorneys that I know in New York City. And so the industry is, you know, so sloppy on so many levels that the only thing that matters is rolling out these technologies as fast as humanly possible. And how they act, another attorney, Julian Gresser, that is one of my mentors at the moment, he said that companies are now acting in flagrant disregard of law. So the complete, what they say is, oh, there are laws about that. Okay, that's cool. Well, sue us. So that's how they act. That's really how they act. Yeah. So that's unfortunately the case. And if you want to live in a city and build something, I would consider hiring a professional and thinking about shielding bedrooms, because at least, you know, in shielding bedrooms, it's either a bad canopy that is a bit invasive because it doesn't look the best, but you can also use paint that is completely, invisible. It looks like normal paint, and you have maybe, you know, semi-transparent drape over your windows, and it kind of looks normal, but it is completely shielded. And this room would be, you know, shielded against any future install of cell towers as well. It is an investment, but if I had to build from scratch, this is how I would personally do it.
I've got some mind-blowing knowledge for you today. Your incredible body is made up of a mind-boggling 30 trillion cells, and you know what? Each of those cells is begging for minerals to function like a well-oiled machine and keep you rocking that awesome life of yours. But here's the shocking truth. Research reveals that a whopping 70% of people are seriously lacking in minerals. Why? It's all thanks to lousy soil quality, subpar diets, and not-so-stellar lifestyle choices. And let me tell you, being mineral deficient isn't a joke. That's because mineral deficiency zaps your energy, weakens your immune system, and opens up a can of worms with countless other health issues. Now, get this. The soil we rely on for growing our nutritious plants is as barren as a desert when it comes to minerals. And those plants growing in that sad excuse for soil, well, they're deficient too, and so are the animals munching on those plants. So, when you consume those plants and animals, you're right there in that deficiency club too. But hold on, no need to panic. I have a game-changing solution to tackle mineral deficiency head-on and supercharge your cells to reach their maximum energy potential. And it's as easy as changing how you start your day each morning. My friend Dave Asprey personally crafted Danger Coffee to effortlessly increase your energy levels and give your body the mineral makeover it craves, all in one steaming cup of joe. This stuff will take you to your highest level, a bold way of living like never before, and when you're firing on all cylinders, you'll show up in the world like a total rock star. Let's be clear, Danger Coffee isn't some kind of miracle potion, but it is, however, a powerful tool to help you take on stress, squash anxiety, and obliterate those pesky nutrient deficiencies. So are you ready to kick things into high gear, leading a life of pursuing greatness and becoming a better version of yourself? Whether you're an athlete, entrepreneur, artist, parent, or a partner like my Eric who adores coffee, it's time to fuel every day with a mineral upgrade. To try Danger Coffee, use the link I'll post in the show notes. And before I forget, use my discount code Dr. Gray and you'll score a sweet 10% off your order.
Wonderful. So many tips. Thank you for all answering all those questions. Well, tell us again, you mentioned your website, but mention it again. Where can listeners find you? Kind of what your social media handles are. And tell us about your upcoming summit.
People can find me at theemfguy.com. And the summit is the 2024 EMF Hazard Summit. It's the third year we do an annual summit, and we have attorneys that talk about EMFs, but we also have a lot of EMF aware doctors that talk specifically about electrosensitivity. So that's really the theme for this year. How to find out if you are personally getting symptoms from these exposures. And a lot of people are getting them, except they don't realize at first that they cannot pinpoint that EMF is to be blamed. And we're really focused on educating the public about electrosensitivity and how to recover, how to get better if you find out that you're getting more and more sensitive as the years go by. So it's at emfhazards.com. And we have 20 different talks from April 11 to 14 presented for free to the public. You just have to enter your name and email to watch them. I'm really, really happy about this lineup. I think it's going to be very exciting and provide a lot of solutions for people that are kind of itching to get them. And I'd say, you know, this is both for people who feel electrosensitive and then just people in general who feel healthy.
They want to learn about,
okay, what is this about? What do I need to do? What should I ameliorate in my environment for better hormonal stability and better longevity also? Because of course, as we talked about, there are multiple reasons that you want to avoid these exposures, even if you don't feel them personally.
Yes, wonderful. Well, I will post a link to your summit in the show notes. And I understand you also have a free gift. So tell us about that.
Yes. So we have an entire guide that I created, six signs that you are electrosensitive. It's also part of, this summit launch is this new guide. And basically it's really six signs you look for, including the symptoms that are most common in electrosensitives. And many people don't realize that one of the signs, for example, is if you get away from these exposures and you feel better, then it's a sign that these exposures were there impacting you, except they were masked, because it's hard to know, well, what is my energy level right now? Is it 10 out of 10 or 8 out of 10? And maybe you thought you were 10 out of 10, but in reality, when you go away, you become 12 out of 10. So somehow you're more energized than your baseline. And part of the reason might be because at home you have these EMF exposures, and if you go camping, you don't. So these are the type of tips we find in there. And I got the entire report. It's a free report, short read, but it was reviewed by Dr. Stephanie McCarter, who regularly treats electrosensitive patients. So a lot of expertise in there and a lot of data that I know people will appreciate and is not nearly enough talked about.
Wonderful. We'll post that link also in the show notes. Okay, this has been amazing. Tell me, as we wrap up the show, last final question, what is your top longevity tip?
My top longevity tip, I think, is just building habits. It's difficult, but this is how I've been personally able to become more and more resilient health-wise as the years go by, is by trying to incorporate certain practices in my life. Sure. I've struggled like everyone else, but I do have this ability to kind of slow things down and, okay, let's do one thing at a time. Something I've been doing lately is an app called Audio Cardio. It's based on research of certain frequencies that are outside your hearing range right now. But if you train them, you can get back some of your hearing. And I discovered that at 33 years old, my hearing was average low. So almost starting to lose hearing. And I knew that my hearing wasn't good, but I thought about longevity and said to myself, well, if I don't have good hearing now, what's going to happen at 60 and 70 and 80 years old? If I want to live old, maybe I'm going to lose all hearing. So that's something that's very sad. And I said, let's build a habit around it. I have to listen to these audio frequencies 1 hour per day. And I found it very easy, but you know, it's all about building practices. No magic pill, but if you build that over time, I found that my hearing, I think, has improved 1% in 1 month. So it's difficult, because I find that when I was younger, I wanted everything to be fast. And then I found out that things take time, right? So it's a bit inconvenient. But at the same time, if you see it as very long term, same thing with my exercise habits and, you know, stretching and these kind of things that, oh, it looks like I always have to stretch. Well, guess what? I'm sitting on a chair right now, so I'm getting tight as we speak. So it looks like I'm going to be stuck with these practices for life. If you want to still move great and feel great in your old age, you kind of have to start somewhere, and preferably start young like me. So as I've been building these practices, I've been appreciating that, okay, I'm in for the long term now, and I'm a little bit less, you know, hyperactive about it.
Longevity tips keep getting better and better. When I started the podcast, everyone would say sleep, 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 you know, and now it just 200 episodes in, it's like they're getting better and better. No one had mentioned habits. So that was a great, great tip. Thank you again today for coming on the show and just empowering us to read how we can reduce our exposure to EMFs. And thank you for your passion spreading education on this topic. Today, I sure hope this didn't fall on deaf ears. So I hope my audience checks out your book and your summit. Again, link of which I'll post in the show notes. This was wonderful. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I hope one of your take-homes from this is that EMFs can truly impact your health negatively in so many ways. Please keep your cell phone away from your head and body and consider getting a safe sleeve case for your phone to block radiation, a belly armor blanket, or a defender shield for under your computer, or simply put your phone in airplane mode and shut off your Wi-Fi when you can. Nick does have an upcoming EMF Hazard Summit, link of which I'll post in the show notes. And lastly, you may have heard me talk about my dad's business, EMF Pollution Solutions. He can come to your home with his more expensive meters and help you determine where your worst sources of exposure to EMFs are and really help you create a sleep sanctuary and healthier home. Reach out if you'd like his contact information.
Be sure to check out my book, Your Longevity Blueprint. And if you aren't much of a reader, you're in luck. You can now take my course online where I walk you through each chapter in the book. Plus, for a limited time, the course is 50% off. Check this offer out at yourlongevityblueprint.com and click the course tab. One of the biggest things you can do to support the show and help us reach more listeners is to subscribe to the show. Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I do read all the reviews and would truly love to hear your suggestions for show topics, guests, and for how you're applying what you've learned on the show to create your own longevity blueprint. This podcast is produced by Teen Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, wellness is waiting. The information provided in this podcast is educational. No information provided should be considered to be or used as a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult with your personal medical authority.